One, two, three. Hey, hey.
Okay, everybody, if you please take your seats, we are heading into our very last session of the afternoon. Natalie, is the recording and everything perfect? Thank you. Okay, welcome back everybody. This is the last session of the day for the Registrar Stakeholder Group here at ICANN 52 in humid Singapore. The last session is with Maggie Surratt and the ICANN compliance team. So I'm going to hand this over to you, Maggie. You probably have a couple of slides for us, hopefully not too many, because I'm sure that our members want to ask you lots and lots of questions. So over to you, Maggie.
Good afternoon, everyone. Maggie Surratt, Contractual Compliance. With me presenting today is Jennifer Scott. We have 68 slides to go through. No, I'm kidding.
There are
68 slides in the deck. What I'd like to do is go to slide three, just to share with you what's in the slide deck. We had put together slides like we do from one ICANN meeting to the next, about the RAA lessons learned summary and guidelines. Lessons learned relate to all of us. It's not necessarily contracted parties' lessons learned. It's lessons learned is what we experience from one ICANN meeting to the next and how we can drive towards understanding those. Providing slides on process guidelines and clarification for your reference. Providing slides on policy effort update. The policy effort update we bring to this audience at every ICANN meeting in preparation for new policies or contract impacts. Then we have slides updates since ICANN 51 general to compliance. We always, at the end of the presentation, provide slides on RAA guidelines and reference of what and how we, in compliance, look at the different provisions and what we request from the registrars. Having said that, if we can go to slide 29 before we get hot and heavy into the lessons learned. Slide 29, let me go to there myself. It's part of what we call policy efforts and updates. I'm sorry, can you go to the one before it, please? So you guys are going to have homeworks, and we're going to have dialogues here, because I don't want to sit here and talk and present to you. On slide 29, we are sharing with you several efforts that are underway that compliance is preparing for. Followed by slide 28, we put, if you can go to 29 now, please, Caitlin. We highlight what is this update about and the effective date of this policy. We also put high-level bullets of what are the steps we look for to be in compliance. So again, please take a look at those. There are several efforts underway. There's the IRTP, there are UDRP, ThickWiz. So we are providing you slides in here to share with you what compliance has looked at and is preparing in anticipation for these efforts to be effective. Review those. If you have questions, please let us know. Our offer still is the same from 3.5 years ago to talk to you and understand this. With that, Caitlin, if you would please, I appreciate your help today. Go to slide 5. Yes. And I'm not, like I said, that's all I'm going to talk to. Slide 5 is just highlight of the slides that we have in the deck, but I would like to turn it over to the audience, see what is the topic you want to discuss. We'll go to that slide and share with you how and what we've provided in the past and what we look for, and we'll take your questions now.
I'll start if no one will. I'd like to see number 2. So we were just discussing, I think you were in the room with the board, things of interpretation and how you handle abuse complaints, which is, I think, 3.18.1 is certainly, and .2 is certainly where a lot of our frustration comes from. So I would spend time on that, and I'd like to see you spend time on the end of the deck that you said about, you had a section at the end of guidelines, and I'd like to understand more what those are.
Sure. So, Caitlin, if you would please go to slide 13. There are lots of slides. How about we just go straight to slide 15? We provide more slides than needed, but we don't want to assume. We don't like that verb. We're going to jump to slide 15, which provides a summary, followed by slide 16 and 17, and we have more slides to support this if we need it. So with that, Jennifer? Do you want us, Rob, do you want us to talk to that slide and share with you what we work with, or do you want to ask questions? How do you want to approach it?
I'm happy to comment on it because I think this slide is indicative of exactly the problem and concern we enumerated earlier. Your second bullet point is, your first bullet point quotes the contract. Your second bullet point attempts to define further the contract. We don't agree. So we do not agree, for example, that reasonable steps include contacting the RNH of the domains. It may include that, but it doesn't have to. And unfortunately, we're seeing in compliance that we must. So, you know, we may have just talked about that domain with them last week, but we've got to check that box with compliance now. So it's that interpretation type of style and pronouncement that gets our backs up. So if you'd put reasonable steps may include this, great. But what we're seeing, and frankly what we're being told, is, hey, GoDaddy does that, so everybody else must now too, because that's a reasonable step if they'll do it. That's not what the contract says.
I see.
And so go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Bob Wygand, web.com. So I would mimic what you're saying, and then we received a subsequent follow-up communication from ICANN Compliance where they said the minimum standard is contacting the RNH. And my general counsel is saying, where in the contract does it say minimum? Minimum intones that there's more steps. What steps are going to be next? That's where you're starting to get the legal minds in these companies saying what's happening. And Jeff Newman, I believe it was you who said to me that if you're involved with a registrar, I don't want to speak on your behalf, but you might want to mention a little bit about how your customer base and why in particular instances you would not contact the RNH. If you have a minute, I think they might be interested to hear that.
And also, yeah, just hold on, guys. I'm going to slow things down just 1 second. I've got a queue building, so I've got Jeff, James, and then Matt Serlin, and then Alan.
Yeah, and I'll spend a minute. And actually, we did sit down with Maggie and Jennifer and Alan, and someone else was there. Who else was there? There was another person, Jonathan? Yeah. Earlier, and we had a discussion. It seemed like a good discussion, and it seemed like we came out of that meeting that it was a case-by-case basis that they're going to move forward on. And just to bring everyone else in, we had gotten the same thing. But one of our jobs as cum laude is we represent a lot of brands, some of them Fortune 500, some of them just large customers. And one of the things that we sign up to do is to review all claims of abuse to ferret the ones that seem frivolous out. And if they are frivolous, if we determine them to be frivolous, we don't bother contacting the registrant at all. We just get rid of it, and then we move on. And so we had gotten the compliance notices. We got a first notice, and then we responded, and then there was a lot of dialogue back and forth, and they came back with pretty much what you saw on the slide initially, that the reasonable steps must include a contacting the registrant. And so this was a couple weeks ago, and then we met here, and I think we had a very positive dialogue on it, and I think compliance understands that it's a case by case. So I think when we come out with something like this, what it should say up as a top is everything is a case by case determination, and then reasonable steps may include, and then put the bunch of things, because in a lot of cases it will include contacting the registrant, but in some cases it doesn't.
James.
Hi, thanks. So you guys can actually take some of the heat off Maggie and go ahead and put it back on me, because this actually was, we were kind of the guinea pig, I think, for at least in this particular case, of what a reasonable step was, and kind of went through some email exchanges of what we thought was reasonable. I will say, however, that in my opinion was something that we were addressing for that particular case, and not necessarily trying to set either an industry or even a GoDaddy standard, universal. And the reason for that is the language is squishy deliberately to preserve registrar discretion, because there is no recipe. We had plenty of conversations and plenty of interests during the RAA that wanted to see that reasonable meant these four steps, and that prompt meant these many calendar days, and we had all those discussions, and we arrived at very delicate compromise with things like reasonable and prompt and appropriate. And when staff says reasonable means this, and prompt means this fast, and appropriate means you're going to follow this course, I think what you're seeing us is you're taking away our ability to be flexible. Now, the reason that's a concern, in particular with Section 3.18, but generally, I think, in the contract, but with Section 3.18, is these are being, in my opinion, misused or misunderstood by elements outside of this community and outside of this room that want ICANN to police content. They cannot get at content providers. They cannot get at the content consumers. They cannot get at the people they want to get at, and they want us. And then when they can't use us, they want to use you. And they're trying to back you in. And let me just say, on the record, you don't want a piece of that fight, because it is a mud puddle with no end. And we're saying here that we need the discretion to do the right thing, because it's going to be situational. Don't paint us in too small of a corner, but don't tie our hands either.
I'm just going to take a response from Maggie, and then over to Matt, and then to Ellen.
Thank you for your feedback. Slide 15, I modified it to say may include. And if you would notice on slide 16, we say the request, and we have all these things. So let me step back. The reasonable steps definition of what might be reasonable was taken from the WHO is advisory. To add to that, we found ourselves, and again, I apologize because it did not say may, because in a different audience, we were slammed, and that's rightfully done, and I take full responsibility for that. Say, you are not doing your job because reasonable steps include this, and you're not giving us this. They want all the proof and the exchanges with you, and we said, correction, it may include. And that's why we built this slide 16 and 17 to bring more clarity. So as Jeff mentioned, and many of you, and I've said it for the last 3.5 years, I was not aware of all the anxiousness around this topic. Don't know why the dialogue didn't happen before, but we are here. What I'm hearing you now is, if I may allow Jennifer to present to you 16 and 17 since we are here in this audience, can you spend a couple of minutes on this, or you want to just take questions and come back to us on 16 and 17? It's your call. It's your meeting.
I'll just let Matt go because he's been very patient and he's had a very hard couple of days since we've been giving him a lot of abuse. So I'll go to Matt and then we can do 16 and 17.
Yeah, now I guess I know how Maggie feels with all the abuse that she takes by this group. Good Lord. Matt Searle and Mark Monitor. Yeah, I mean, not to kind of sound like a broken record, but, you know, from our standpoint, and we talk about this a lot, you know, every ICANN accredited registrar enters into the same agreement, so we get that. But as we often say to you, we all have different business models, right? So James's business model is different from Mark Monitor's, is different from ENOM's. And so I think what you're hearing consistently is that to the extent possible, we need to have the flexibility to operate, again, within the letter and the spirit of the contract, but also taking into account the different business models that we have. Because like Jeff says, you know, I will never enter into a situation where I'm going to suspend Google.com because we get an abuse report. It's just not going to happen. I will, you know, out of turn, reject it. But I have a unique business model. Jeff has a unique model. GoDaddy's model is different. So over and over, you're just going to hear as much flexibility as we can have. Again, within, you know, we all enter into the same contract, so we've all got the same requirements. But to the extent that we can have flexibility, especially on stuff like this, is really ultimately what we want to get to.
Okay, back over to you, Maggie. Sorry, Alan, then Maggie. Or you can fight it out amongst yourselves.
So let me just take a second. Some of you were in a meeting a few minutes ago, and some of you weren't. So let me repeat some of what I said there, which I've said at several meetings of several different constituencies over the last couple of days. On the contract compliance side, there are widely differing interpretations of the contract by different constituencies within this community. And I think some provisions like 318.1 and 318.2 are kind of a Rorschach test where people are reading into it what they want to read into it, right? I do think we owe it to the contracted parties and the rest of the community to clarify how we interpret and how we intend to enforce some of what are perceived to be the more controversial provisions of the agreement. And I think we should sit down and talk with the contracted parties about those provisions of the agreement, hear what you have to say, let you hear what we have to say, see if we can reach some common ground on that. I think because of the nature of the ICANN community, there are other people who also want to have a role in that dialogue. And virtually every group that I've spoken to over the last few days wants to at least throw in their input on that. I think the contracted parties in ICANN are in a different position than the outsiders because we are the parties to the contract. We are the parties that negotiated the contract. We're the parties that understand the history of the drafts and the discussions and how we ended up with the language that we ended up with. And I was not a part of most of that, but I've actually spent quite a bit of time over the last couple of months trying to understand how that compromise language was arrived at. So I think we need to have those discussions, and then I think we owe it to the community to more clearly state where we think the bounds of the contract are on some of those things. I don't think we're ever going to be able to do that in a perfect way. I think that, you know, there will always be the edge cases where, you know, I don't know how to say it, but I agree with you. There are a lot of provisions in the agreement that use language that is reasonable, appropriate. It's not specific on exactly what actions contracted parties are obligated to take, and it's a question of interpretation of that. And I think we should sit down and have a dialogue and hear each other out and see if we can reach some common understanding on that. And there will be some further meetings, hopefully, in the next day or two here at ICANN to start some of that dialogue. I've also been telling people, and again, I just want you to hear the same message I've been telling other groups. I think aside from the issues that are within the four corners of the contract that, you know, we may be able to enforce and say registrars or registries must do X, Y, Z, because if you don't, it's a breach of section, you know, blah, 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 the agreement. There are a lot of difficult, intractable problems, and that's it's some of the parties trying to solve those difficult, intractable problems are among the ones who are putting pressure on you and on ICANN under the contract. And I think as ICANN, we need to at least recognize that those are complicated problems to solve, and we as ICANN may have a role in trying to figure out collectively how the community can solve that. So I think we need to clarify what's within the scope of the contract and what's not, and for those things that are outside the scope of the contract but that implicate consumer safeguards and the public interest, I also want to initiate a separate dialogue, separate from the discussion of the contract terms, to talk with everybody in the community about what can we do collectively to try to solve those problems. What role can ICANN play? What role can law enforcement play? What role can regulatory agencies play? What role can registrars and registries play? Even if it's not a breach of the contract if you don't do it, I think all of us have an interest in having this be a healthy and robust and clean business environment to operate in.
No, I've got a queue building. I've got Volker, Carlos, and then Jennifer.
Thank you. Volker Greimann speaking, Key Systems. Thank you, Alan, for that statement. I think it will be very helpful for ICANN and the registrars to come together and put out a statement to clearly delineate what we think certain terms in the agreement mean. We may have certain sections in that explanation say that reasonable, means what's reasonable in the certain circumstances of the case, because there is no better definition of that. There has to be some flexibility. I think you have seen that, you've agreed to that. That may be the case in many cases. That we have to have a certain flexibility, and that statement should point that out. Just as a response to compliance does not need to check every box if the original complaint is answered within the response that we are giving. What may be helpful also in that statement may, instead of having a certain list of positives that a registrar must do to be in compliance with what the RAA states, we might have a couple of negatives, what is not sufficient, i.e., if we say reasonable in the contract, it may not be reasonable to just do nothing, would be something. Of course, when we get a complaint that says in the subject line, get rich fast, it may be reasonable to do nothing because that email will go to spam automatically. Not even looked at, but that's the fault of the sender, of course. So we have to look at what the positives are that we can find that would be something that we could put in as a positive meaning of certain terms, but also negatives of what would be a breach or what would be a problem if the registrar acted like that.
Carlos and then James.
Thanks. I'm Carlos Alvarez, ICANN Security Team. I just want to make an offer. We would be happy to sit with Ben Butler and the anti-abuse teams from other registrars to discuss about what technically means when you mention appropriate, reasonable, or prompt with regards to abuse. It's usually a technical discussion. It's malware, it's botnets, it's spam. That can be technical. We could provide suggestions or recommendations on what those words mean in this technical environment. So just want to offer, we can help with suggestions in with regards to this.
James.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll offer up whatever we can. Carlos, I think one of the reasons we're in this mess is because people don't want one registrar setting the standard universally, okay? And I think that to the point that Alan was making, I'm going to say something that's a little maybe controversial and abstract here, but if we're bringing problems to ICANN, and we're looking at our contracts, and we're saying, you know, I'm not really clear where in the contract I have the authority to address this problem, and we talk about it as part of the community, and we come up with kind of a hung jury on whether or not we can find some policy or create some policy or something like that. Then, I don't think that the answer is we keep looking, we keep getting creative, we keep coloring outside the lines. Maybe at some point someone has to say this is not a problem for ICANN. You need to take this to, you know, your courts. You need to take this to various abuse groups or industry groups or something like that. And I think that the concern is that And I'm not saying this is a staff issue. I'm saying that this is other sides of the community saying, why haven't you addressed my problem? And I think a valid answer is that is not something that we are authorized or something that's within our remit to address.
Yeah. Let me just respond quickly. I agree with you. I think that the appropriate response in some cases is it is outside our remit. It's not within the scope of our responsibility. Nobody has delegated that authority to us. We are not a global regulatory agency. We are not global law enforcement. Nobody has delegated that kind of responsibility to us. But I also think that that response often is an inadequate response. It needs to be followed by, we're not the ones to address this. If you want to address this problem, maybe you should go do X, Y, Z, right? I think rather than simply washing our hands of the problem, I think maybe what we want to do is say, ICANN's not the one to solve this problem. Maybe if you got these people together, they could solve the problem, you know, together with the information that's in who is, and if you put all that together, maybe there's a solution here. And that's the reason I want to think about setting up a dialogue, a forum for exchange of information, not to increase the scope of what ICANN does, but simply to allow ICANN to facilitate information that might help complaining parties solve their problems if ICANN can't solve them for them.
I am fully on board with the idea that we need to have better answers to point people to where they should take those types of issues when they're not within ICANN's remit. I would just say, you know, jealously guard your remit. You know, it's not instinctive behavior for organizations like this to not want to go out and crusade beyond their borders. But it takes some deliberation to say no. We're going to stay in our yard.
Jeff.
Thanks. And I'm completely on board with all this. And we're getting to the what happens. We have this issue, and we all know this, that it's the same as somebody calls the electric company to to the city and then complain about something else, and you say, well, you're both the city. Can't you just do something about it, or can't we make you do something about it? And I think what we have is these discussions, and then we said, hey, we need to come out with some sort of statement. And what I don't think we've done is I don't think we've had this big, bold statement that says, this is not our problem, go somewhere else. Of course, it'll be more tastefully done than that. But I think we need to have that. We sort of tiptoe around that issue, and then everyone keeps coming back and asking for it. And I think we need to get the contracted parties together. I don't know, there was a whole thing dust up before about when this intersessional timing or session would happen, but I think we need to have that happen and come out with a bold statement that says, this is not, this is not who you come to for these problems. Go elsewhere. We will not even respond to this. And yes, I know it might put some people off, but we need to do that, or else people will just keep coming back to you and saying, please fix this, and then we'll keep going back and forth like this. So we need to sort of cut off the entrance to it. And until we do that, you must be this height to go on this ride. And until we put that in front, little kids are going to keep trying to slide their way in.
Interesting analogy, but not the worst one. Rob, and then I'm going to go back over to Maggie's teams. I think you had a couple of slides you did want to show us.
Can we go back to 16 or the previous one you had up? I think it was 16. Yes. I picked on language earlier, Maggie, and this is much better from my point of view. Examples of steps we took or examples that some people took and that type of thing. We're getting our back up against language because it gets used against us as soon as you say it. There is one thing in there, though, that I do want to talk about at some point, and maybe it's later in today's discussion, which is, you say you could request the correspondence with complaint in a registrant. I actually don't think that is your right unless you're auditing us. So, our frustration is you come at us and say, what did you do? And we say, well, we contacted the registrant, we did this, we wrote back. In fact, in a lot of times, you already have that information because we've already written back to the registrant, and they still forward that to you as a complaint because they don't like the answer we gave them. So your first question then is, well, did you investigate and did you write back to the registrant? And I want to scream and say, the complaint to you has a response. Why are you asking us if we responded? And then you demand, well, could you give us the correspondence with the complainant? And it's like, you have it. Just some reasonableness. But my point about the audit part of it is, We come back and we say we did these five things to investigate. Then you say, prove it. If you really think we're lying, you can audit us to prove it a couple times a year. That's built into the contract. But I'm getting tired of having to prove it and give confidential communication to you every time just so you can check your box of did we actually do what we said we did. And I think we need to clarify that because it's certainly a frustration for, I know, several of us in the room that it's all of a sudden you're going to get so deep into it where the contract simply states we have to investigate and take reasonable steps. Feel free to ask us what those are. If you think we're lying, feel free to audit us. But, you know, we'd like to stop getting into the weeds on every single crazy complaint.
So, quick response. I mean, one of the things I've said over the last couple of months in conversations with some of the contracted parties is we often get kind of broad general complaints that compliance is screwing up or not doing our job or making your life difficult or whatever. It's much easier to address problems if we have a concrete example like that where we can actually sit down and talk through it. And I think I've invited some of the contracted parties before, and I'll extend this invitation to the room. I think we need to sit down and talk through some of these things, and the more specific we can get on things like that, the better. Because if, you know, that, we could sit down and in 20 minutes have a conversation and agree or disagree, but at least you'd understand what our position is, we'd understand what your position is, maybe we find a middle ground, maybe we agree with you, maybe not. But that's much more useful than compliance and we disagree, but I'm not real sure what the problem is. So one of the things I suggested to the registries earlier in this meeting was give us specific examples, then let's sit down and try to talk about them. I'd encourage you to do the same thing. And if the concern is you don't want to reveal confidential information about compliance issues that have been raised against your company by ICANN in the face of competitors, reach out to us individually, give us some examples, let us sanitize them, let us put some case studies on the table, and then let's schedule a meeting and with some representative group of people and see if we can hammer out a common position and figure out where we're aligned and where we're not.
Alan, if I may, just, you know, following on from the, sorry, it's McKaylee for the record, just following on from the interaction we had with the board and yourself and Fadi, we're trying to schedule a meeting, a small group of us with Fadi and yourself and a couple of others tomorrow evening. Needless to say, that doesn't mean that can be the only interaction, but, you know, we are moving this forward and hopefully we'll be able to come to some level of milder disagreement. I would say agreement, but we'll go on milder disagreement for now and move things forward. James, I think, had something. I think we have Chris Pelling remotely, and then Volker, I will go to you eventually. But
So just quickly, you know, it would be an interesting thing is if we could kind of step out of the programmatic approach to compliance and look at some things like, you know, when you send me a certain number of cases, I could sit down and say, hey, I have an idea. Instead of sending me every single complaint that you receive, let's say, relative to 3.18 or invalid whois or something like that, how about we walk you through what our standard operating procedure is? It doesn't matter which of the 8 or 9 or 10 people are on duty of, 24/7. If they receive this, it's going to follow these steps, and when it's done, it comes out, and here's what we do. We suspend, we reactivate, we do this. And then you don't send us those anymore. Because you've blessed our process, and only if you believe we've deviated from it or something fell through the cracks or something like that. I mean, that's just one way to say, you know, let's kind of stop passing notes back and forth in class and maybe just kind of have more of a wholesale exchange of ideas. It's just I'm putting something out here as something to think about because I do believe that this is unscalable, particularly when we have other outside groups writing, and I think, Rob, you nailed it earlier, is they're writing handbooks on here's how you have to ask these magic words to compliance to get what you want from them, and here's how to flood compliance with complaints so they can't ignore you anymore, you know, and tactics like that are being, used against your front door.
And that's one of the reasons I think we need to be more clear. It's not just for the benefit of the contracted parties. It's to make clear to other parties what's within the scope of compliance and what's not, right?
Okay, look, I have Chris Pelling, who's been trying to get in on remote. Chris, go ahead. Chris? Chris, if you could type it into something that we can see, we will read it into the room. Okay, I'm going to go to Volker and then to Jennifer, and if somebody see something from Chris, please let me know.
I have one point, but I'm going to come to that later. First of all, I like Rob's comment where spot checks would be perhaps a good idea for more trusted registrars. I mean, once you see that a certain registrar has answered a certain type of complaint satisfactorily for every 10 times, then you might only ask for the full complement of questions every second time, then every third complaint that you get, and every fourth, and so on, and then at a certain point you only do spot checks of a certain type of complaint that you get for that registrar, just because you know that he follows a certain process and his answers will probably be okay. That will be less work for you, less work for us, and overall good situation. Second point, I would like to commend you on improving the quality of complaints that we're getting. The number of what I've used to call BS complaints has gone down significantly. We still get some. For example, who is complaints where the complainant has forgot to type in half of the email address and shows that in his complaint. That should have been caught. But usually the quality of complaints that we're getting has increased, which to my opinion, to my mind means that you've been filtering out a lot of bad complaints before they reach us. And that has been a request for us for a long time. And I'm very happy to say you're on the right path there.
Jennifer?
Jennifer Standiford, web.com. I just want to make a comment towards a suggestion that James put forth around us sitting down with the compliance, kind of going through our standard operating procedures, understanding that registrars have different models and there are procedures would vary. I think what that actually would result in is best practices and which would benefit existing registrars and new registrars, right? You know, we've mentioned and touched on this whole thing over the course of this week around developing use cases. As we look at complaints and we receive them and we handle them and given the resources we either have or we don't have, we put time and effort into them, and then we get to the stage where the issue's just, hopefully, we get to the stage where the issue's closed. But we actually don't get a post-mortem as to why the issue was closed, given all the information that we've provided or have not provided, right? So I think that that's something to consider as well as we look at exchanging more information around our practices versus what's considered acceptable or not acceptable by both parties. But I think one thing also would be important to focus this on is when an issue is closed, kind of out of the clear blue sky, and we don't get that resolution as to how you reach that decision. And that's where I think it would be also helpful to registrars.
I believe Caitlin has a comment from remote for us. Oh, I mean, I don't mind. That's not fine.
Oh, I thought Chris wanted me to read it, and so I was going to do so in a British accent. Or at least my best.
We've only got 15
minutes. No, I'm not.
Oh, please do.
I will, and yeah, I know. I would offend him, and you know. So, anyway, it says, essentially, when did ICANN compliance become the content police? At which point did it become ICANN's remit to make it, I presume content, our problem? For example, we are not a hosting company. We do not host content, nor is it within our grasp. Is a question, you do it. I think he said, you do it, me do it. But that's what he's saying, and I think, you know, we certainly have encountered situations. We are a hosting company, others are, and some aren't, and You know, it's something that we come into, this understanding that if you're not hosting the content, content complaints kind of don't go very far.
So, I agree. We're not the content police. We're not law enforcement. We're not a global regulatory agency. Again, you know, there are some gray areas on content where the difference between content and abuse and some kinds of abuse that you do need to take action on really is content related. But in general, I agree with you. We should not be responsible for it. It is not part of our remit to police content.
Thanks, Ms. McKaylee. I think you may need to specify something, a couple of things there, because I suspect, well, I can see Graham is thrashing out the bit there to have a go. Yeah, no, but I mean, just I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you, and okay, we are a hosting provider, but there are certain types of abuse reports that I will politely but firmly tell the complainant to go sort it out with my client, that I am not the arbiter of, well, I don't know, the internet or whatever. I mean, we're not going to get involved. And it's unreasonable for me as a hosting provider. In many cases, the only choice I have is to literally unplug a server which could be serving hundreds, if not thousands, of websites. I don't have the discretion to remove a paragraph of text or a single page. I can unplug the Ethernet cable going into that server. I can't do anything else. Graham,
please. I would point out, though, that they have no remit over your hosting provider. Like, yes, you offer hosting services, but that's not within ICANN's remit.
Oh, no, no.
The domain name side is.
No,
so,
no, but that's,
so the fact that you're both is irrelevant. It's the domain name side that falls under compliance, not hosting.
Right, yes, so. But what he just said suggests that there's a gray area, to quote him.
Well, I thought I heard him pretty clearly say he didn't want to be the content police, so I was...
No, I heard that, but it was the follow-up bit that made me nervous. Graham, please.
So I think this is one of the reasons we need to be more clear about what we think is within our remit and what is not, right? Because I think there's a lot of confusion, less so, actually, I think, in this room, but a lot of confusion out there in the community, and I think we owe it to the contracted parties and to the community to make more clear, definitive statements about where the dividing line is between what we're responsible for and what we're not. And a lot of what people want us to be responsible for, we're not.
I don't think it's but just one point, Alan. I think by saying it's confusion in all cases may be generous of you. I think in some cases it's more a matter of amplification, conflation. I don't know. There's lots of other words, but confusion wouldn't be my choice of words. I think it's intentional in some cases. Graham.
Thank you, Graham, for the transcript. Elliot's not here. Yeah, I guess I feel vaguely obligated to stick it to compliance a bit. I forget where I first heard it, but it bears repeating, that the phrase content police doesn't quite cut it, especially as a registrar that doesn't do any hosting. We don't end up policing content. We end up being the judge, jury, and executioner of that content. It's not that we're deciding if it's good or bad and providing that evidence to somewhere. It's that we're killing it. We're bringing that content down. And the scope of that is considerably bigger than policing, and it has consequences. Thanks.
Thank you. Just by the way, for anybody who wants some, the venue catering seems to think that serving us coffee at the end of the day was a good idea, but there is coffee there, so please do help yourselves to it. Maggie and team, please continue.
No, it was not our purpose to speak to all 68 slides, but I want to remind the audience, we've done it before, we continue to do it. Focus on the upcoming policies that are going to be in effect. We have provided you slides like we've provided in the past, what compliance is going to be looking for. So please review the deck. To Rob's earlier comment, at the end of the deck, which is half of the deck, are additional slides that we have provided in the past. What we do to those slides, we leverage previous slides. We update them based on our collective input and what we learn as we grow through the new agreement. You can go to the same slides from 2 years ago when we were putting together the 2013 RAA, and you can see how it has evolved or changed by adding a may or by taking something else. So take a look at this presentation. With the time remaining, I would like to address a few things that I've captured notes on. Something we have not would be valuable to bring to this audience, and I don't mean just the registrars, it's the entire ICANN community, are the stats on the abuse complaints. I would like to inform you that there were actions taken by many of your counterparts or some of you present in this room on some abuse complaints and were addressed. There were a lot of complaints that compliance closed and sent away because of the different topics you guys talked about here. There were a lot of complaints that we do follow back up with you to provide more information on. And with that, I'm going to go to some items I heard about the correspondence. Rob, you were talking about we can run an audit. We have committed to all of you from the beginning. We do our work with fact finding. What I think I heard you is the spot checks you're referring to, you are asking us to make an assumption that that process, or on your behalf responding to the complainant every time, they have the process and go for that. If you were the customer on the other end, would that be satisfactory to you? That's all I'm going to put. I'm not here to debate the point, but we can take it more. But the maintaining the correspondence is for the value to be able to do fact-finding. To your point, we do ask for the correspondence from the reporter as a proof that they went to the registrars first before coming to us. There is some creativity out there. We look at the correspondence and we compare, and we see that what's in there is really aligned, but sometimes you provide us more information that helps us really close it. Which leads me to the closure comment Jennifer made. Jennifer, the closure notices that go to the registrars and the registries, you're correct. They do not contain closure code or the reason. And again, that's an opportunity for improvement because we look at it, and again, it could be that's not the right way to look at it. Is you are aware of where the non-compliance or alleged non-compliance issues were, and the fact that it's closing, it doesn't require any further action from you. We didn't think there was a need to share why we closed it. You've provided the information. If you do not provide the information, as you guys, I don't know who said it earlier, we bug you or we come back and we ask for more. The closure notice that goes to the reporter, whether it's closure after an action has been taken that's been closed, or a closure notice that says, no, we are not taking your report further, does contain a closure notice because they're not privy to the correspondence we have with you, which you have more in-depth knowledge of the issue. So the case by case has always been our approach. We have been, as we continue to say, you are a unique model within each of your operations. You need, and I really insist on you, not compliance. I want Michaela and Jennifer to hear us. You keep coming to us for best practices, guys. We're not registrars. You need to share amongst yourself the best practices. If we share with you best practices, we can be in breach of our contract because we're taking away your competitive edge. What we share with you is exactly lessons learned to help us stay on the right path. You're giving us a responsibility beyond our remit in this area. Same responsibility we tell to the other stakeholders. If you've kind of followed us in the different sessions. I'm sorry?
Unfortunately, we've been stuck in meetings with...
Right.
So we couldn't follow you with the other
sessions. So please join us. If your time permits on Wednesday, I know many of you have joined before. Jennifer is our... Yeah, I know. Believe me, that's why we split and divide and conquer also. Wednesday has been a session that we put together since Dakar for the same reason I'm sitting here and talking to you. The Wednesday session, it brings an appreciation to each one of us within this ICANN community. Even though we are contracted parties, compliance, IPC, law enforcement, ALAC, we are all part of this ICANN world, and we have an obligation. Join us on Wednesday, because we present a very high-level update. And on Wednesday, the value of that's been questions come up. Many times, many of your counterparts get on the mic and answer the question, and the person who asked the question, oh, I didn't know that. So it brings an appreciation. We need, you talk about communication amongst us, it's really communication bigger than just the two of us. We admit we have to improve on that. So I've addressed several of the points. Join Wednesday if you can. Take a look at the presentation. If you have issues, reach out to me. Alan knows, and everybody in this community knows. I don't go to bed with one email in my mailbox. I do check my email every day of the week. I am a workaholic, but I do have a life too, so don't worry about me. Not that you are. So please, I have said it many times, let me know what's on your mind, and let's work through it.
Okay, well, I've got a queue forming, and we're going to try to work our way through this. Just for the record, Maggie, a lot of us check our emails 7 days a week too, so you know, we're the wrong audience for that comment. Whose was first? Jeff Newman, who is now a registrar.
Yes. Thank you, Jeff Newman. I guess I'm going to make the same request I think I made in L.A. on behalf of the registries, but it's the same request. You know, I'm assuming that you have a manual for your customer support or for Jennifer and others that do compliance. How about sharing that with us? How about looking, instead of, I don't think what we're asking you to do is to give us your best practices or define them. It's really, what is the checklist that you give to your compliance representatives to check against to determine whether someone's in compliance? I think that's what we're asking you to share with us. It's not help us determine what our best practice is, because we all know what we do. It's really give us your manual. Tell us what you look for. And then that'll basically help us either understand or help us to have discussions with you and Alan and others on, you know, what we think is good, bad, what we could change, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's kind of the sharing we're asking from you.
If I may, take a look at the slide deck. The manual is taken exactly from the slide deck we have here. That's what we extract those bullets. If you go to any of the slides, what do we look for? What are some of the ideas?
I think I had Volker again.
Yeah, I just can't leave it alone. You know me. Volker Greimann speaking. Last question from my end, probably for today. How does compliance measure success or progress? Sometimes from your presentations to the public, it can seem to be that your metrics are, we have received so and so many complaints, we have followed up with so and so many complaints in this time, there have been so and so many registrars found in breach, so and so many have been terminated, so that's two more than last time, so we are improving. But that probably isn't your metrics, but it can seem that way. So if you could share some information, shed some light on how you internally measure success, as in telling your people that they have done a good job and you are feeling that you are making progress.
Just before I go to Maggie, there's one question after one intervention more from James, and then I have to close out because they have to run off somewhere else.
Thank you, Volker. It's interesting how the same slide can be looked at from different views. The slide that you're saying, it's about the volume and all that, there's always going to be volume. We do receive complaints, right? We don't want to focus on the complaints. The success story in here and to the community, if I may restate what you were saying, but in a different view, is the story of the registrar's collaboration, the turnaround time, and the resolution of those complaints which have been brought forward from the outside to your attention. So the success for our compliance team is, are we responding? We have turnaround times. When you have the 1555, we have the 555. And we try to respond within 3 days, but internally it's the 555, similar to you. So the success, what we do for our team is the quality. We have QA reviews. Our team, we have subject matter experts for the different complaint types, and we're trying to build what we call a scalable model. The subject matter experts review the quality, and success stories are, we try to target what we call good quality, but also with the, another quality check is our response time to you, but also to the reporter. So there are many ways. Another way we measure success, which has not been to our advantage, I'll be honest with you, our customer satisfaction survey has been on the decline. And I can tell you the first number one culprit is abuse complaints that we are closing, not sending your way. So having said that, there are many ways to measure success. What we hope to do, again, the perception has always been you do not collaborate by publishing those dashboards. Volume is always a factor. You know, they report on you guys how many domain names you have within your portfolios. For us, it's complaints. That's what compliance. It's a subset of compliance. So if you have ideas of measuring success differently, send me a definition, and we'll be happy to discuss further.
James, no. And they have to go. Rob, if you can.
I'm actually raising my hand because the gentleman next to me had a very interesting observation / comment about the terminology that you're using to describe this. So would you mind?
Sure. Absolutely.
Hey, this is Aman from Endurance International. Maggie, you said that you're measuring success of abuse complaints in terms of customer satisfaction, whether the customer is satisfied. The complainants are not our customers. And if you're looking for customer satisfaction, if you've taken action on a particular customer, he's never going to be satisfied. And we're not obligated to satisfy the complainant.
Okay, Rob, I'm going to give you the last word practically.
I'd love it if you measured it differently. So what you're in is you're in all these graphs and stats about how many complaints you get and how fast you close them. I give two craps about that. Do I really believe James and GoDaddy is in violation of their RA? No, I don't. I'd like you to clean up the industry and get rid of the bad actors that we all worry about, rather than measuring your success based on how many complaints you get and how fast you close them. How about how many registrars you get rid of and actually find in serious breach, as opposed to the nitpicking against a GoDaddy or an Eno? That would be my measure.
Can you send me that in writing? It's 5:30. Send me what is the measure, how would you measure that, and a definition, and we'll review it and get back.
How many serious breaches did you actually find? That would be a good start.
Send me that in an email, please. And to the gentleman, customer satisfaction. Everybody is a customer when you file a complaint in any industry. The customer satisfaction report we send also to the registrars to let us know how we are doing. So when I focused on abuse, it is not just about abuse. We send at every closure of a complaint, we send a customer satisfaction to the register, to the contracted parties, because it's also sent to registries, and to any reporter, which amongst this audience, we have many anonymous reporters from here, present and absent. You are our customers when you file a complaint. I used abuse in this case because when we were on the downtrend, I wanted to know exactly, is it the process? Is it the turnaround time? We try to see based on the feedback, because overall satisfaction is the fifth element of that survey. If you haven't, put a complaint with us, and let's experience the customer satisfaction survey with you.
Okay, thanks, Maggie. I think really we have to close this out. Thank you to Maggie and Alan. Your session is at what time? 8:45, is this on Wednesday?
Yes, it's at 8:45. And if I may ask, do not publish this presentation. Let me add the May in there, because I added it in the other decks, but I will add it and will send you the link where it's going to be published.
Okay, so we're not to publish this one. Wait till she changes some of the verbs.
In the future, can we get it in advance?
No, she did. Would have sent it to Paula already. Paul Goldson would have had it for the last day or so.
No, I get the timing's often tight, but you show up with a 68 deck and ask questions about it. If we'd had the chance to go through it, we might be able to direct you to, hey, here's an issue, here's a, you know. So if you can get it to us a week in advance so we can read it on the planes on the way over.
So
I don't know if it's possible or not.
Rob, we publish everything, and you want it in advance. We gave it to Paul last Friday or last Thursday. Everything is on there.
That's on us. We didn't get it out to our members.
Right, so it's will we be able to go to every 68 slide of those? We put everything in there that is within the scope. Let us know which ones you want to talk about.
But that's my point is we don't have it before you show up. And I get that you sent it to us, so that's our internal problem. We'll fix it. But it was a little frustrating for me to day you show up and you say you got 68 slides. I'd love to know what was in them to comment on them. It sounds like you did your job on this, and I apologize. It sounds like we dropped the ball. So we'll solve that.
Oh, Volker, come on.
Sorry, Volker speaking. Not a question, just a general comment. Tomorrow the session is in parallel to a working group session that's of high interest to most registrars. That's a different topic that we tried to raise with Eiken a couple of times, that high interest topics should not conflict. That's a problem that unfortunately has arisen again. So many registrars that are here today will not be able to be there tomorrow, which I regret.
So you have Thursday's session. It's a closed session for us. Take a look at the deck. I don't have a new one. This is it. If by Thursday you would like to talk to certain slides, we're there. That's why we build it that way. So it's the same presentation, and it gives us an opportunity for Thursday. If you can't be there Wednesday, join us Thursday. It's closed, just us, and it's roll up your sleeves and let's work.
And the suggestion that we had discussed in the Genus Own also with the registrars, it would be helpful for such presentations to be available prior to the meeting as a webinar, so registrars could prepare for this meeting, and instead of going through the slides, which we have not done this time, but we have done a lot of times before, we could ask substantive questions to the point of the slides and of the presentation. So if we, for example, had 1 week before this presentation available as a webinar that we could download and watch in our leisure time, that would have been a perfect preparation for us to have an even more in-depth discussion and preparation for that.
So we work towards that, guys. But like I said, the new slides are the policy updates. Take a look at the policy updates. Everything else has been there for the past year.
Okay, thanks, everybody. This meeting is now adjourned. There is, oddly enough, coffee there if you want it. Don't ask. Honest to God, nothing to do with me. But there is coffee. Mike, didn't you have your thing afterwards?
Hey, McKelly, can I get in the queue?
Yes.